Blog Talk Radio.
Join us to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. The following is a rebroadcast compilation of James Mooney's interviews on Time for Hemp Radio.
Look at all that money, yeah, the money that they spent. Take another look and take some time for hemp.
Broadcast of Time for Hemp all around the world on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and on AM/FM stations all across America. I want to give a big shout out to all of my friends up in Canada, KDK Distributors, and thank them for giving us a grant to keep us loud, proud, and strong, and thank them for helping to improve the content of this program in their own way. Also, I want to say thank you to AmericanFreedomRadio.com for raising the voice of freedom and for raising the voice of the marijuana movement. If you like this particular broadcast, you are sure to like the other fare found on the network. I like the Vinnie Eastwood show. I can learn more in his commercials than I can learn in a whole hour of news broadcast on CNN sometimes. So I would encourage you to tune in. This is Leap Wednesday. Every Wednesday we focus on the amazing people at Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. And my joint host for Leap Wednesdays is the co-founder of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, Peter Criss. Peter, thank you for taking Time for Hemp. Peter, we can't hear you.
Hello?
There we go. Now we hear you.
Now you hear me.
Hi, Peter.
How you doing?
Fine, thank you. And thank you for being on the broadcast today.
Absolutely. We got some interesting stuff going on up in New York State. In fact, I just did a radio show in Buffalo about it. The governor wants to reduce the charge for marijuana possession in public to under 25 grams. And the guy on the show said to me, well, what do you think about that? I said, well, that would be like if in the 1860s, instead of ending slavery, we just said you could only beat your slaves between noon and 4 on Friday, you know? So, because it doesn't do anything to solve the problem. The problem with slavery and the problem here is prohibition. It's not how we do the prohibition. It's that prohibition does not work and creates problems in our society. That's the issue.
Exactly. And joining us on this joint broadcast, and by the way, anytime you hear the word joint on this broadcast, you can just know that 1.5 million people to 2 million people all around the world are firing up their vaporizers, their joints, and all the things that they use to smoke out of. Joining us on the joint broadcast today is a joint friend of Peter's and I, and his name is James Mooney. James, thank you for taking Time for Hemp.
Oh, it's a real honor, Casper. And hey, Peter, good to be with you again.
Yeah, good to talk to you again, too, James. It's been a while. How's everything going out there?
Well, if it got any better, I tell you, I probably wouldn't know what to do with myself.
Are we talking about the weather or the policy?
No, we're not talking about the policies, but we're talking about how things are advancing and things are getting better.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know today's topic is the war on drugs is disrupting American families, and that sounds like what Peter was talking about was going on in there in New York. And this is today's topic, and we will be reprising this show on July 4th. So happy July 4th as well. But, yes, the war on drugs is disrupting today's American families, aren't they?
Big time. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, just before we get started, I want to give James a little opportunity to give us a little bit of his background. You work for Utah State Department of Corrections and State Police, correct?
Yeah, well, actually, I was undercover for 7 years, deep undercover for 7 years, and then I worked with the Department of Corrections for jeepers. Actually, I was there as a volunteer and worked for there almost 7 to 10 years, as a matter of fact. And but when I was undercover, I was also volunteering at the prison system.
Ah. Now, in that undercover work, were you a believer back then? Or?
Oh, boy, was I a believer. I was told that I took down more people myself, by myself, well, also with my contact. And I like to just use his initials. His name, we'll call him KS. That's okay, because he's still working for the department the state of Utah. And he expressed to me that I took down more people than all the other undercover agents in the entire state of Utah.
And boy, that must have had a big impact, huh? It must have really almost ended the problem of drugs in Utah.
I don't think so. You know that leads right into something. If that's okay, if I go ahead and just express a story that is very impactful about the devastation that the war on drugs is having towards families. If I
absolutely
lead right on into that, Peter, what do you think?
Go ahead, certainly.
Well, there was two incidences, and I'm going to express both of them. The first one was I had a couple inside of a house that was making a buy, and they were wired. And so I could hear them as I was listening, and I knew everything that was going on in there. And I heard this little boy cry out for his mother. And when he did that, it struck me. I said, holy mackerel. I'm not a solution here. I am actually part of the problem, because I know I'm going to take that mother and father away for 10 years and deprive that child of their parents. Now, that started something. But then what really, really brought things to light about how damaging that my work was doing to the culture came a little bit later on. And KS, we were meeting at he gave me a call and said, James, I've got some good news for you, and I got some bad news for you. And I said, well, let's hear the good news. And he said, we got this person on film selling drugs to the high school students. Got him on film. I said, oh, wow, out of sight. So we got him good, right? Yeah, we've got him arrested. He's all arrested. I said, well, then what could be bad about that? And he said, well, it's your son, James.
That brings it home, doesn't it?
It sure
does. Oh, boy. And so I walked down there. My son did not know what I was doing. Nobody knew who I was and what I was doing except for KS. And so I walked into the detention area, in the area that in the city that I was working out of, and sure enough, there's my son. And I tell you got to know, that was a wake-up call for me. you know.
Yep.
And I really had a hard time. Do I go ahead? Because KS says, we'll do whatever you want, James. You know, do you want us to go ahead and arrest him and send him through the system? You know, and he's, and I got, you know, I was really troubled, you know. And finally, I decided not to. And so I just took him home. And that has troubled me for a while. Did I really do something that was best for my son? And I just, it was very troubling. And
we
went on to being a drug dealer. I often thought that, well, maybe I should have had went ahead and just put him in the system. I cannot tell you how much his activities in being a drug dealer has disrupted our family.
Yep.
I mean, it's just, it's been horrendous. However, I am glad that I didn't arrest him. I'm glad I didn't put him in that system. But because of that, and because of his, it has not helped to mend our family whatsoever. Now, that's my personal experience.
You know,
but my other experiences that I've seen over and over and over again, as some of the people know, I am the founder of the Native American Church, American Church, which actually gives protection to people that are utilizing marijuana and certain substances, such as peyote especially. But the thing is that the devastation of the culture, even though my son, he has the Aklava Native American Church of Hawaii, which has, and he has no qualms about saying that his medicine is cannabis, and that's cool. I like that, and we can protect those people. As a matter of fact, as he was shipping some cannabis into Hawaii for his church, the U.S. Attorney's Office confiscated it. And he asked me, what should I do? And I said, file a federal injunction immediately. And so I actually gave him the money to do that. And he filed the injunction. And just recently, not only did he not get arrested or have any or the actual ruling with the Ninth Circuit Court, the federal government in Hawaii, just made a commitment inside a hearing, a federal court hearing, that they would no longer confiscate Aklava Native American Church of Hawaii's cannabis. They also just recently ruled that now the United States has got, they're on trial for confiscating and violating federal laws by confiscating his sacrament out of the United States mail, which is just precedent. I mean, there's no precedent. I mean, that makes a precedent now.
Right.
So it is very clear with the federal government, you do not mess around with the Native American Church, and therefore, anybody that has a Native American Church, Aklava Native American Church, authorized participation card, they are protected now. And the churches are all protected now.
That sounds a little out there, considering Roger Christie tried to do the exact same thing with his Coptic church, and he's spending 2 years in jail, and he hasn't even had trial yet. He gave people paperwork
now,
and even ordained them as part of his church and called them a minister, claimed them, you know, ordained them as ministers of his church so they could go forward in their country, I mean, in their state and in their county, citing that they are a member of this church and that they are affiliated as a religious member and an elder, and therefore they're able to smoke marijuana and hold marijuana. And the people that cited those pieces of paper, those documents, they are also sitting in jail, and they're not that those papers did them no good.
Well, that's because of his church. because he's actually author of the Native American Church of Hilo, but he didn't market that or he didn't state that. And so they went ahead and interfered with that. And I would venture to say, because of certain things that have happened just of recent, he will be released. But he'll make a statement that he is part of Oklahoma Native American Church, and that will save him, because we all know, Peter knows as well as I do, that the war on drugs is totally unconstitutional. And the only place that they will recognize the constitutionality is not with the Rastafarians and not with any other church. They will recognize it for the Native American Church or Oklahoma Native American Church, and they will not allow that exceptions to the law for any other church. It would just drive the United States agencies crazy. And so I'm happy to, and that's part of the reasons why I answered the your statement about how's things going, that they're really going really well, because I was in a meeting yesterday with an attorney that has a lot of influence with the feds, and I feel that probably within another couple of weeks, Roger will be released.
Well, that'll be good. It's interesting. When you mentioned the unconstitutionality of our drug laws, one of the things I'd like to make reference to for the listeners, the way I look at it under the Constitution is under the, 66 years old and brain dead. What do we call the law about transporting stuff between states?
Intercommerce.
Exactly. Well, we had to change the Constitution in order to ban the sale of alcohol. Because when the courts read the Commerce Clause of the Constitution, they saw that the federal government had no right to ban interstate commerce of anything. So in order to ban the interstate commerce of alcohol, we had to first amend the Constitution of the United States, pass the 18th Amendment, and then we passed the Volstead Act under the 18th Amendment and banned alcohol. We have never amended the Constitution to ban drugs. So therefore, these drugs, as far as I'm concerned, and I think we agree on this, the unconstitutionality of this comes from the Commerce Clause, which just says that the government has a right to regulate interstate commerce. They do not have a right to ban it.
Right. But there's something else that's even more powerful, Peter, and you may or may not be aware of it. In 2000, Clinton signed into law what they call the Religious Land Use and Institutionalized Persons Act of 2000, and in there it states very clearly that any religious purpose that you have, that the government has no rights to ban interstate commerce between tribal governments and other nations.
Ah.
And they did that specifically because the peyote is transported from Texas and or Mexico. It grows no other place in the world. So
well,
therefore, they made that exception, or they put that into that law specifically to be able to transport
stuff. On the program today, it is Lethal Wednesday, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, and my joint host, Peter Chris, and I are having a great joint conversation with James Mooney. So Peter and James, thank you for taking time for Hemp.
Absolutely. Good to be here.
It's fun.
So, James.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say to James, when that incident came up with your son, that really turned the light on, huh?
Oh, that absolutely did, for a couple reasons. One is I felt that the cannabis, because of certain circumstances that my son had been through, I realized it was actually assisting him.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to know, it was extremely difficult for me. Because of who I was and what I was doing, where's your commitment? Is it to your
yep.
Your family, or is it to your undercover job? You know, and I mean, when I find out, I mean, I had to make a decision. What is this something that is benefiting my son? And I had to say, absolutely. I mean, there is just no question that it was benefiting him. And yet, and that's when I started saying, with that incident, with the, hearing that little boy crying out for his mother, and then being confronted with this, knowing that this is something that is good for my son, then I started to realize, holy mackerel, it's the laws that are all goofed up. And then, and then when you started looking at the Constitution, what the world is going on here? Why in the world is there a law against against cannabis? It made no sense to me. And then my son started educating me about cannabis.
Right.
And then I just found, I mean, then what I really discovered, the entire war on drugs was motivated to marginalize the American Native culture starting in 1918.
Yep.
And then when you realize that peyote, which is a prime plant that is used in all the Native American ceremonies, not just the NACTP ceremony, but in it was used in every ceremony. And that's the reason in 1918 they attempted to outlaw the entire American Native culture. And with that, and because of my great-grandfather, who is James Mooney, an entomologist for the Smithsonian Institute, argued against the law against outlawing the American Native culture. And when he did that, and they ended up dropping the law that they attempted to outlaw the Native American culture, and it passed the House of Representatives, but in the Senate, they used my grandfather's arguments, and that's where they killed the actual bill. But then he said, in order, this is not going to stop them. And he said, and so that's the reason the Native American Church was incorporated in 1918 to protect the entire culture, because that's what they wanted to do, was to outlaw the entire American Native culture. And so by that, when that happened, and they were able to incorporate the Native American Church, then it received the protections underneath the First Amendment for the,
you know,
to protect the entire culture. And
it's
that's when the Bureau of Indian Affairs, prompted by the Bureau of Indian Affairs, attempted to marginalize marginalize the American Native or the Native American Church from receiving its full constitutional rights. And then almost at the same time, that's when they started going after cannabis. And the reason they basically went after cannabis was to limit its ability, because it makes the best biofuel that there is for a variety of reasons.
Right.
And the oil company and the paper industry wanted to outlaw cannabis precisely to eliminate a competition for the oil industry and for the chemicals that break down the wooden fibers of to make paper. And so the chemical industry wanted to limit cannabis, because cannabis, it has the chemicals that breaks down the fibers to make paper. And so that's the reason, in my mind, the war on drugs was actually brought about, because marginalizing the Native American culture, because it's an earth-based healing religion, per se, meaning that every plant, every substance that is grown by earth naturally is a detriment to the oil industry and to the chemical industry, because you can get everything you want just from the plants. And you don't have to go. And so, to me, the entire war on drugs was implemented only because of the marginalization that they did to the Native American Church. And so, just recently, in the last 10 years, they've finally given up and realized that the Native American Church has its constitutional rights to be able to utilize its religious principles with the full blessing of the United States First Amendment Constitution.
Yeah, when you mention that about your son, it's one of the things that I do with my presentations, and that is I ask the people in my audience to raise their hand if they know an illegal drug user. And when I do that, about a third of the hands go up, which really surprises me that people are that honest. And then I look at the people that didn't raise their hands, and I tell them, you people that didn't raise your hands, you're all lying. Now, I don't want them to misunderstand me. They may not know they're lying, but I guarantee you that everybody in America knows an illegal drug user. They may not know they know an illegal drug user, but trust me, they do. It's either in their family, a friend, or whatever. But there's too many of them out there for any of us not to know one of them. And what happened to you with that situation is it became very clear right in your own family what the situation is. And the other thing I want to mention real quick about what you were talking about, my mother would say that problems that you're talking about back in 1918, 1919, they are rooted in our concept of America as the vast melting pot. My mother hated that idea. She used to say that what you get out of a melting pot is an alloy, and all the alloys are exactly alike. So the melting pot means that all the Americans should be exactly alike. She liked the idea of America being a huge tossed salad, where everybody maintains their own identity, but yet they all mix together to make America the great country it is. And I like that as a better mixture of America, that we have all these different cultures, all these different religions mixing together and yet coming together as Americans, but still having their own personal beliefs that are protected by the rest of us.
Boy, Peter, you and I are brothers. Man, that's exactly my same sentiment. I interpret the Constitution specifically as a kind of a guideline to assist people to honor each other's differences.
Yes.
To honor each other's differences. Not to merge into them, not to change them, but to honor those differences. To me,
yep,
that's what the Constitution is all about.
And that's what makes us a great country, is that diversity, all those different things all working together. That's why we are the nation we are, and it's when you start going after people. You know, in the beginning of this nation, we used to arrest people for not being in church on Sunday, you know, because we tried to force morality down people's throats, and that is not the purpose of government. But government is there to allow us to be different, because out of that difference is where we get all of our great successes.
Peter, if I have the time to add here, is
go ahead.
That in I mentioned that it was the Bureau of Indian Affairs, and still is the Bureau of Indian Affairs. As far as I'm concerned, in most Indian tribal governments, or most Indians on federally recognized tribes, I think the Bureau of Indian Affairs is the most corrupt organization on the face of this planet. And what influences the Bureau of Indian Affairs more than anything else is religious ideologists that want to perpetrate their ideology onto other people. And especially with the Native American churches, was extremely threatening to them. And the statement simply is that you have a principle of the Native American church, such as Quanon Parker. He says the white man goes into his churches to hear people talk about God. We go into our teepee to talk to God face to face. And so that is extremely intimidating to religious organizations that say you have to go through, let's say, a pope, or through one person entity like maybe Jesus Christ or something, and if you don't go through them, or you're never going to get to heaven. And so here you have a religious movement which is indigenous to all nations, to the entire earth, where it says, hey, talk to God straight on. I'll never forget when I first went with Clifford White Buffalo Man Jake when I was in really difficult circumstances, and I kept on wanting to go to him for answers. And he says, what are you doing? Why are you asking me? Why don't you just go to the source? Yeah, I'm a two-legged, he said. And to get the point across, he says, I'm two-legged. Hell, I may lie to you. You know, don't listen to me. Go to pray, talk to God straight face to face. I mean that's very intimidating to these other religions. And so,
you know, the whole thing about religion is interesting to me. I personally am an atheist, but I know that my right to be an atheist is only protected by the right of other people to have their religions. So if I take away the right of anybody to worship the way they want to, then I lose my right not to worship if I don't want to. So it's all rooted in exactly the same thing, and that's why those founders, who I think were the most amazing group of people you could have ever gotten together, because they had just kicked the crap out of the King of England, who owned everything. They owned this whole continent, pretty basically. And when they first sat down to make laws, the first laws they made were the Bill of Rights, and those said what laws they would never be allowed to make. You know, that they, no matter what they want
to
do.
Hear this one. This is going to, Casper, this will be interesting to you too. And some people know it. Most attorneys do know it. But the founders of the Constitution.
Iroquois Indians.
That's exactly right. Exactly
yep.
right. And no other document in the history of mankind that has run a government has that we the people. There's
yep.
no such thing as that. And so it's really quite interesting. And yet the Native American culture is the last one to be able to experience the full aspects of the Constitution. I mean, where does that make any sense? I mean,
they invented it, and they're the last ones to get the benefit out of it.
Well, the joint broadcast today, we are having a joint conversation with the joint host of the organization Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, Peter Chris, and our joint friend, James Mooney. And I want to thank you both for being on the program. Great show today. Peter, I'll let you take over.
Okay, no, fine. I just want to mention one thing. Two libertarian candidates for president and vice president, Gary Johnson, former New Mexico governor, Republican governor of New Mexico, is the presidential candidate, and a guy by the name of Jim Gray, a retired Republican conservative judge from California. And the reason why I'm mentioning both of those people is, since the beginning of LEAP, Gary Johnson has been on our board of advisors. And Jim Gray, for the last 7 years, has been a speaker for LEAP and one of the key members of LEAP. So two people for LEAP are running for president and vice president of the Libertarian Party. So just in case anybody thinks that we're a bunch of crazy lefty liberals out here, those staunch conservatives also agree with us.
Well, and we've had James on the program. He launched
yes.
his vice presidential candidacy. Here on the program, he made it a point to announce it on Time for Hemp before going to Las Vegas to stand alongside Gary Johnson to make that bid for the White House. And we intend to have Gary on the broadcast in another week or two to address some of the reasons why he should be the next president of the United States.
Absolutely. So I didn't know if you were aware of all that, James, but we got people running that are actually with LEAP.
That's fantastic. I did not know that. And
yep.
however, I actually was a featured speaker at the conference, the Libertarian Conference here in Utah. And boy, oh boy, did that go off good. It was really, really, really nice. And I had no idea that the Libertarian Party was so open-minded, but so smart. I mean, they know what the heck they're doing, and they understand emphatically the unconstitutional aspects of the war on drugs. So I was pleased to be and honored to be their featured speaker at their convention.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's interesting because they are true conservatives. They are government and fiscal conservatives. They are not social conservatives at the Libertarian Party. They think
That's
people
true.
Should be allowed. They understand that liberty means that you should be allowed to do anything you want to do as long as you don't harm another person or another person's property. That should be the only thing we should be concerned about as far as law enforcement goes, is people that are out there hurting other people, not because they're doing things to themselves that some of us don't like. That isn't law enforcement's job.
Peter, is my memory correct? You were a chief of police for how many years?
No, I retired as a captain. I worked for 20 years in law enforcement.
And I spent my whole time in uniform. I spent 15 years as a patrol officer, 2 years lieutenant, and then 3 years as a captain. And then I only became a cop for one reason, and that was a 20-year retirement. So when the 20 years was up, I left, and I got into this work. As soon as I retired in 89, I've been doing this stuff ever since.
Well, Matt, you're right on the streets. You knew what was going on right from the get-go. That's fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we made those arrests. We did those investigations. We gave those press conferences that say these arrests will put a big dent in the drug problem as we know it. You know, all that silly stuff. Did it for 20 years and never saw. In fact, if anything, the drugs got purer, more available. And you know, it's I like to tell people that they all want law enforcement should be more effective. Well, the first thing I like to say is, and I know Utah is different because you worked in the prison system in Utah, but in the rest of the country, we do not have any drug-free prisons. And I'm sure
Utah
they don't.
You neither, my friend. Let me tell you.
Yeah, exactly. And I like to bring that up to people because I like to say to people, how many of your rights are you willing to give up so that you cannot keep me off of drugs? Because that's what we're asking people to do. We're doing civil forfeiture. We're stealing people's property without even arresting them for it. And we're saying that that's part of trying to make this law work. When you have a failed policy, you would be amazed at the bizarre things you do to make it appear that it's working, even though it's failing every time.
Absolutely. You know, I have one other story, if we have that time. Casper, how are we?
We have about 6 minutes.
Okay, I think this would be really important, really important. I had a young lady, she was a student at the University of Utah, have an appointment with me, and she sat down and started talking. She wanted to buy a Aquava Native American Church authorized participation card. But she came in, and as she started talking, she just started tearing up. And I said, what's going on here, young lady? And she says, I'm too late. And I said, you're too late. And then she went in and she said, some time ago, her boyfriend, who was working on his PhD, happened to get stopped, and he had some resin in a pipe, cannabis resin. He ended up being incarcerated for 3 months. And then when he came out, he lost his scholarship in the program, and 2 weeks prior to her coming and visiting with me, he committed suicide.
Oh, Lord.
I mean, right now, it brings tears to my eyes.
Yeah.
This war on drugs is just causing chaos to the family unit. I mean, this is a young lady that she was going to be married to this fellow. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you, if that doesn't wake people up, what the heck will?
Yeah.
I mean, it was just, this war on drugs is just the most detrimental thing that you could possibly imagine to perpetrate upon our citizenship.
Well, it's like we say at LEAP, you can recover from your addiction. You never recover from your conviction. You get a felony conviction, that goes with you to every job interview you go to for the rest of your life. And we should not be passing laws where the enforcement of the laws actually cause more damage to people than the thing that we're trying to stop. That is not good lawmaking, and that's what we're doing. There's more people that are destroyed by the criminal justice system and having their life destroyed than are destroyed by drugs. You know, it's just a reality. And we keep doing it over and over again. It's almost as if the drugs aren't bad enough, we got to make them worse by making them illegal. You know?
It's just so ironic. You know, in Utah County is known per capita as the overdose county of the country. More people overdose on drugs in Utah County than anywhere else in the nation per capita. And I finally have come to a type of a settlement of ideas of why this is happening, and it's because of hypocrisy. It's plain hypocrisy. Young people cannot handle hypocrisy. And so you have people saying one thing, and then they say another thing, or, and the laws are doing something. It's just, it's driving our young people to suicide. It really is.
Well, it's like I tell people, the kids sit in the class and hear the DARE lecture. They hear how marijuana makes you stupid and unproductive and all this other stuff. And meth is bad and heroin's bad. And then they walk out and they're passing a joint around. And one of the people they're passing it to is the guy that's the head of the honor roll. The other one is the one that's doing this. The other one's the star of the football team. And they think to themselves, geez, these people aren't stupid. These people aren't unproductive. They lied to me about that. They must have lied to me about meth, too. I think I'll try a little bit of that. And that's the problem when you're not honest. You got to be honest and tell people.
Here's something that is the truth, and that is we're down to about a minute. And, James, you're going to be back on the program 2 weeks from today. But this gives us a chance to give a shout-out to the Leaf website and any other URLs that you want to bring attention to and put a spotlight on any upcoming events that you want to give a shout-out for. James?
Well, what I would like to say is I hope my Aqua of a Native American Church people has put a banner on your station so that if people want to have safety within and bring a slow aspect into the war on drugs, become a member.
This is Leap Wednesday. Every Wednesday we focus on the amazing people at Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. And my joint host for Leap Wednesdays is the co-founder of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, Peter Criss. Peter, thank you for taking time for him. Peter, we can't hear you.
Hello?
There we go. Now we hear you.
Now you hear me.
Hi, Peter.
How you doing?
Fine, thank you. And thank you for being on the broadcast today.
Absolutely. We got some interesting stuff going on up in New York State. In fact, I just did a radio show in Buffalo about it. The governor wants to reduce the charge for marijuana possession in public to under 25 grams. And the guy on the show said to me, well, what do you think about that? I said, well, that would be like if in the 1860s, instead of ending slavery, we just said you could only beat your slaves between noon and four on Friday, you know? So, because it doesn't do anything to solve the problem. The problem with slavery and the problem here is prohibition. It's not how we do the prohibition. It's that prohibition does not work and creates problems in our society. That's the issue.
Exactly. And joining us on this joint broadcast, and by the way, anytime you hear the word joint on this broadcast, you can just know that 1.5 million people to 2 million people all around the world are firing up their vaporizers, their joints, and all the things that they use to smoke out of. Joining us on the joint broadcast today is a joint friend of Peter's and I, and his name is James Mooney. James, thank you for taking time for hemp.
Oh, it's a real honor, Casper. And hey, Peter, good to be with you again.
Yeah, good to talk to you again, too, James. It's been a while. How's everything going out there?
Well, if it got any better, I tell you, I probably wouldn't know what to do with myself.
Are we talking about the weather or the policy?
No, we're not talking about the policies, but we're talking about how things are advancing and things are getting better.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know today's topic is the war on drugs is disrupting American families, and that sounds like what Peter was talking about was going on in there in New York. And this is today's topic, and we will be reprising this show on July 4th. So happy July 4th as well. But, yes, the war on drugs is disrupting today's American families, aren't they?
Big time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, just before we get started, I want to give James a little opportunity to give us a little bit of his background. You work for Utah State Department of Corrections and State Police, correct?
Yeah, well, actually, I was undercover for 7 years, deep undercover for 7 years, and then I worked with the Department of Corrections for Jeepers. Actually, I was there as a volunteer. I worked for there almost 7 to 10 years, as a matter of fact. And but when I was undercover, I was also volunteering at the prison system.
Ah. Now, in that undercover work, were you a believer back then, or?
Oh, boy, was I a believer. I was told that I took down more people myself, by myself, well, also with my contact, and I like to just use his initials. His name, we'll call him KS, that's okay, because he's still working for the department, for the state of Utah. And but he expressed to me that I took down more people than all the other undercover agents in the entire state of Utah.
And boy, that must have had a big impact, huh? It must have really almost ended the problem of drugs in Utah.
I don't think so. You know, that leads right into something. If that's okay, if I go ahead and just express a story that is very impactful about the devastation that the war on drugs is having towards families.
Absolutely.
Lead right on into that, Peter, what do you think?
Go ahead, certainly.
Well, there was two incidences, and I'm going to express both of them. The first one was I had a couple inside of a house that was making a buy, and they were wired. And so I could hear them as I was listening, and I knew everything that was going on in there, and I heard this little boy cry out for his mother. And when he did that, it struck me. I said, holy mackerel, I'm not a solution here. I am actually part of the problem, because I know I'm going to take that mother and father away for 10 years and deprive that child of their parents. Now, that started something. But then what really, really brought things to light about how damaging that my work was doing to the culture came a little bit later on. And KS, we were meeting at he gave me a call and said, James, I've got some good news for you, and I got some bad news for you. And I said, well, let's hear the good news. And he said, we got this person on film selling drugs to the high school students. Got him on film. I said, oh, wow, out of sight. So we got him good, right? Yeah, we got him arrested. He's all arrested. I said, well, then what could be bad about that? And he said, well, it's your son, James.
That brings it home, doesn't it?
It sure
oh,
does.
Boy. And so I walked down there, and my son did not know what I was doing. Nobody knew who I was and what I was doing except for KS. And so I walked into the detention area in the area that in the city that I was working out of. And, sure enough, there's my son. And I tell you, you got to know, that was a wake-up call for me. You know, and I really had a hard time. Do I go ahead? Because KS says, we'll do whatever you want, James. You know, do you want us to go ahead and arrest him and send him through the system? You know, I was really troubled, you know. And finally, I decided not to. And so I just took him home.
Uh-huh.
And that has troubled me for a while. Did I really do something that was best for my son? And I just, it was very troubling. And
some people
went on to being a drug dealer. I often thought that, well, maybe I should have went ahead and just put him in the system. I cannot tell you how much his activities in being a drug dealer has disrupted our family.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, it's been horrendous. However, I am glad that I didn't arrest him. All right.
Yep.
I'm glad I didn't put him in that system. But because of that, and because of his, it has not helped to mend our family whatsoever. Now, that's my personal experience.
You know,
but my other experiences that I've seen over and over and over again, as some of the people know, I am the founder of the Native American Church, Aquava Native American Church, which actually gives protection to people that are utilizing marijuana and certain substances, such as peyote especially. But the thing is that the devastation of the culture, even though my son, he has the Aquava Native American Church of Hawaii, which has, and he has no qualms about saying that his medicine is cannabis, and that's cool, and I like that, and we can protect those people. As a matter of fact, as he was shipping some cannabis into Hawaii for his church, the U.S. Attorney's Office confiscated it. And he asked me, what should I do? And I said, file a federal injunction immediately. And so I actually gave him the money to do that. And he filed the injunction. And just recently, not only did he not get arrested or have any or the actual ruling with the Ninth Circuit Court, the federal government in Hawaii, just made a commitment inside a hearing, a federal court hearing, that they would no longer confiscate Aquava Native American Church of Hawaii's cannabis. They also just recently ruled that now the United States has got, they're on trial for confiscating and violating federal laws by confiscating his sacrament out of the United States mail, which is just precedent. I mean, there's no precedent. I mean, that makes a precedent now.
Right.
So it is very clear with the federal government, you do not mess around with the Native American Church. And therefore, anybody that has a Native American Church, Aquava Native American Church authorized participation card, they are protected now. And the churches are all protected now.
That sounds a little out there, considering Roger Christie tried to do the exact same thing with his Coptic church, and he's spending 2 years in jail, and he hasn't even had trial yet. He gave people paperwork and even ordained them as part of his church and called them a minister, claimed them, you know, ordained them as ministers of his church so they could go forward in their country, I mean, in their state and in their county, citing that they are a member of this church and that they are affiliated as a religious member and an elder, and therefore they're able to smoke marijuana and hold marijuana. And the people that cited those pieces of paper, those documents, they are also sitting in jail, and they're not that those papers did them no good.
Well, that's because of his church, because he's actually an Aquava Native American Church of Hilo. But he didn't market that, or he didn't state that. And so they went ahead and interfered with that. And I would venture to say, because of certain things that have happened just of recent, he will be released. But he'll make a statement that he is part of Aquava Native American Church, and that will save him. Because we all know, Peter knows as well as I do, that the war on drugs is totally unconstitutional. And the only place that they will recognize the constitutionality is not with the Rastafarians and not with any other church. They will recognize it for the Native American Church or Aquava Native American Church, and they will not allow that exceptions to the law for any other church. It would just drive the United States agencies crazy. And so I'm happy to, and that's part of the reason why I answered the your statement about how things going, that they're really going really well, because I was in a meeting yesterday with an attorney that has a lot of influence with the feds, and I feel that probably within another couple of weeks, Roger will be released.
Well, that'll be good. It's interesting when you mention the unconstitutionality of our drug laws. One of the things I'd like to make reference to for the listeners, the way I look at it under the Constitution is under the, brain dead, 66 years old and brain dead. What do we call the law about transporting stuff between states?
Intercommerce.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we had to change the Constitution in order to ban the sale of alcohol, because when the courts read the Commerce Clause of the Constitution, they saw that the federal government had no right to ban interstate commerce of anything. So in order to ban the interstate commerce of alcohol, we had to first amend the Constitution of the United States, pass the 18th Amendment, and then we passed the Volstead Act under the 18th Amendment and banned alcohol. We have never amended the Constitution to ban drugs. So therefore, these drugs, as far as I'm concerned, and I think we agree on this, the unconstitutionality of this comes from the Commerce Clause, which just says that the government has a right to regulate interstate commerce. They do not have a right to ban it.
Right. But there's something else that's even more powerful, Peter, and you may or may not be aware of it. In 2000, Clinton signed into law what they call the Religious Land Use and Institutionalized Persons Act of 2000. And in there, it states very clearly that any religious purpose that you have, that the government has no rights to ban interstate commerce between tribal governments and other nations. And they did that specifically because the peyote is transported from Texas and or Mexico. It grows no other place in the world. So therefore, they made that exception, or they put that into that law specifically to be able to
On the program today, it is Lethal Wednesday, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. And my joint host, Peter Chris, and I are having a great joint conversation with James Mooney. So Peter and James, thank you for taking Time for Hemp.
Absolutely. Good to be here.
It's fun.
So, James. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say to James, when that incident came up with your son, that really turned the light on, huh?
Oh, that absolutely did, for a couple reasons. One is I felt that the cannabis, because of certain circumstances that my son had been through, I realized it was actually assisting him.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to know, it was extremely difficult for me to, I mean, because of who I was and what I was doing, where's your commitment? Is it to your
yep.
Your family, or is it to your undercover job? You know,
yep.
And I mean, when I find out, I mean, I had to make a decision. What is this something that is benefiting my son? And I had to say, absolutely. I mean, there is just no question that it was benefiting him, and that's when I started saying, with that incident, with hearing that little boy crying out for his mother, and then being confronted with this, knowing that this is something that is good for my son, then I started to realize, holy mackerel, it's the laws that are all goofed up. And then,
and then
when you started looking at the Constitution, what the world is going on here? Why in the world is there a law against cannabis? It made no sense to me. And then my son started educating me about cannabis.
Right.
And then what I really discovered, the entire war on drugs was motivated to marginalize the American Native culture starting in 1918.
Yep.
And then when you realize that peyote which is a prime plant that is used in all the Native American ceremonies, not just the NAC Chipi ceremony, but in it was used in every ceremony. And that's the reason in 1918 they attempted to outlaw the entire American Native culture. And with that, and because of my great-grandfather, who is James Mooney, an Indianologist for the Smithsonian Institute, argued against the law against outlawing the American Native culture. And when he did that, and they ended up dropping the law that they attempted to outlaw the Native American culture, and it passed the House of Representatives, but in the Senate, they used my grandfather's arguments, and that's where they killed the actual bill. But then he said, in order, this is not going to stop them. And he said, and so that's the reason the Native American Church was incorporated in 1918 to protect the entire culture, because that's what they wanted to do, was to outlaw the entire American Native culture. And so by that, when that happened, and they were able to incorporate the Native American Church, then it received the protections underneath the First Amendment for the,
you know,
to protect the entire culture. And
it's
that's when the Bureau of Indian Affairs, prompted by the Bureau of Indian Affairs, attempted to marginalize marginalize the American Native or the Native American Church from receiving its full constitutional rights. And almost at the same time, that's when they started going after cannabis. And the reason they basically went after cannabis was to limit its ability, because it makes the best biofuel that there is for a variety of reasons.
Right.
And the oil company and the paper industry wanted to outlaw cannabis precisely to eliminate a competition for the oil industry and for the chemicals that break down the wooden fibers of to make paper. And so the chemical industry wanted to limit cannabis, because cannabis, it has the chemicals that breaks down the fibers to make paper. And so that's the reason, in my mind, the war on drugs was actually brought about, because marginalizing the Native American culture, because it's an earth-based healing religion, per se, meaning that every plant, every substance that is grown by earth naturally is a detriment to the oil industry and to the chemical industry, because you can get everything you want just from the plants. And you don't have to go. And so, to me, the entire war on drugs was implemented only because of the marginalization that they did to the Native American Church. And so, just recently, in the last 10 years, they've finally given up and realized that the Native American Church has its constitutional rights to be able to utilize its religious principles with the full blessing of the United States First Amendment Constitution.
Yeah, when you mention that about your son, it's one of the things that I do with my presentations, and that is I ask the people in my audience to raise their hand if they know an illegal drug user. And when I do that, about a third of the hands go up, which really surprises me that people are that honest. And then I look at the people that didn't raise their hands, and I tell them, you people that didn't raise your hands, you're all lying. Now, I don't want them to misunderstand me. They may not know they're lying, but I guarantee you that everybody in America knows an illegal drug user. They may not know they know an illegal drug user, but trust me, they do. It's either in their family, a friend, or whatever. But there's too many of them out there for any of us not to know one of them. And what happened to you with that situation is it became very clear right in your own family what the situation is. And the other thing I want to mention real quick about what you were talking about,
My mother would say that that problems that you're talking about back in 1918, 1919, they are rooted in our concept of America as the vast melting pot. My mother hated that idea. She used to say that what you get out of a melting pot is an alloy, and all the alloys are exactly alike. So the melting pot means that all the Americans should be exactly alike. She liked the idea of America being a huge tossed salad, where everybody maintains their own identity, but yet they all mix together to make America the great country it is. And I like that as a better mixture of America, that we have all these different cultures, all these different religions mixing together and yet coming together as Americans, but still having their own personal beliefs that are protected by the rest of us.
Boy, Peter, you and I are brothers. Man, that's exactly my same sentiment. I interpret the Constitution specifically as a kind of a guideline to assist people to honor each other's differences.
Yes.
To honor each other's differences. Not to merge into them, not to change them, but to honor those differences. To me,
yep.
That's what the Constitution is all about.
And that's what makes us a great country, is that diversity, all those different things all working together. That's why we are the nation we are, and it's when you start going after people. You know, in the beginning of this nation, we used to arrest people for not being in church on Sunday, you know, because we tried to force morality down people's throats, and that is not the purpose of government. But government is there to allow us to be different, because out of that difference is where we get all of our great successes. Now,
well,
how do the people...
Peter, if I have the time to add here, is
go ahead.
That in... I mentioned that it was the Bureau of Indian Affairs, and still is the Bureau of Indian Affairs. As far as I'm concerned, and most Indian tribal governments, or most Indians on federally recognized tribes, think the Bureau of Indian Affairs is the most corrupt organization on the face of this planet. And what influences the Bureau of Indian Affairs more than anything else is religious ideologists that want to perpetrate their ideology onto other people. And especially with the Native American churches, was extremely threatening to them. And the statement simply is that you have a principal of the Native American church, such as Quanon Parker. He says the white man goes into his churches to hear people talk about God. We go into our teepee to talk to God face to face. And so that is extremely intimidating to religious organizations that say you have to go through, let's say, a pope or through one person entity like maybe Jesus Christ or something, and if you don't go through them, or you're never going to get to heaven. And so here you have a religious movement which is indigenous to all nations, to the entire earth, where it says, hey, talk to God straight on. I'll never forget when I first went with Clifford White Buffalo and Jake when I was in really difficult circumstances, and I kept on wanting to go to him for answers. And he says, what are you doing? Why are you asking me? Why don't you just go to the source? Yeah, I'm a two-legged, he said. And to get the point across, he says, I'm two-legged. Hell, I may lie to you. You know, don't listen to me. Go to pray. Talk to God straight face to face. I mean that's very intimidating to these other religions. And so
the whole thing about religion is interesting to me. I personally am an atheist, but I know that my right to be an atheist is only protected by the right of other people to have their religions. So if I take away the right of anybody to worship the way they want to, then I lose my right not to worship if I don't want to. So it's all rooted in exactly the same thing, and that's why those founders, who I think were the most amazing group of people you could have ever gotten together, because they had just kicked the crap out of the King of England, who owned everything. They owned this whole continent, pretty basically. And when they first sat down to make laws, the first laws they made were the Bill of Rights, and those said what laws they would never be allowed to make. You know, that they, no matter what they want to do.
Hear this one. This is going to, Casper, this will be interesting to you too. And some people know it. Most attorneys do know it. But the founders of the Constitution.
Iroquois Indians.
That's exactly right. Exactly
yep.
right. And no other document in the history of mankind that has run a government has that we the people. There's
yep.
no such thing as that. And so it's really quite interesting. And yet the Native American culture is the last one to be able to experience the full aspects of the Constitution. I mean, where does that make any sense? I mean,
yeah, they invent it and they're the last ones to get the benefit out of it.
Well, here's one thing that does make sense. I encourage people who are listening to go to the websites of our sponsors and click on their websites and let them know that you heard about them here at Time for Hemp. If you're looking for a way to inform people about the need to end prohibition and to feed brains some amazing facts, go to leap.cc and find a great speaker to bring to your neck of the woods. On the joint broadcast today, we are having a joint conversation with the joint host of the organization Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, Peter Chris, and our joint friend, James Mooney. And I want to thank you both for being on the program. Great show today. Peter, I'll let you take over.
Okay, no, fine. I just want to mention one thing. Two libertarian candidates for president and vice president, Gary Johnson, former New Mexico governor, Republican governor of New Mexico, is the presidential candidate, and a guy by the name of Jim Gray, a retired Republican conservative judge from California. And the reason why I'm mentioning both of those people is since the beginning of LEAP, Gary Johnson has been on our board of advisors, and Jim Gray, for the last 7 years, has been a speaker for LEAP and one of the key members of LEAP. So two people for LEAP are running for president and vice president of the Libertarian Party. So just in case anybody thinks that we're a bunch of crazy lefty liberals out here, those staunch conservatives also agree with us.
Well, and we've had James on the program. He launched
yes.
his vice presidential candidacy. Here on the program, he made it a point to announce it on Time for Hemp before going to Las Vegas to stand alongside Gary Johnson to make that bid for the White House. And we intend to have Gary on the broadcast in another week or two to address some of the reasons why he should be the next president of the United States.
Absolutely. So I didn't know if you were aware of all that, James, but we got people running that are actually with LEAP.
That's fantastic. I did not know that. And
yep.
however, I actually was a featured speaker at the conference, the Libertarian Conference here in Utah. And boy, oh boy, did that go off good. It was really,
oh, yeah.
really, really nice. And I had no idea that the Libertarian Party was so open-minded, but so smart. I mean, they know what the heck they're doing, and they understand emphatically the unconstitutional aspects of the war on drugs. So I was pleased to be and honored to be their featured speaker at their convention.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's interesting because they are true conservatives. They are government and fiscal conservatives. They are not social conservatives at the Libertarian Party. They think
That's
people
true.
Should be allowed. They understand that liberty means that you should be allowed to do anything you want to do as long as you don't harm another person or another person's property. That should be the only thing we should be concerned about as far as law enforcement goes, is people that are out there hurting other people, not because they're doing things to themselves that some of us don't like. That isn't law enforcement's job.
Peter, is my memory correct? You were a chief of police for how many years?
No, I retired as a captain. I worked for 20
oh.
years in law enforcement, and I spent my whole time in uniform. I spent 15 years as a patrol officer, 2 years lieutenant, and then 3 years as a captain. And then I only became a cop for one reason, and that was a 20-year retirement. So when the 20 years was up, I left, and I got into this work. As soon as I retired
oh, yeah.
in 89, I've been doing this stuff ever since.
Well, man, words. You're right on the streets. You knew what was going on right from the get-go. That's fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we made those arrests. We did those investigations. We gave those press conferences that say these arrests will put a big dent in the drug
yeah.
problem as we know it. You know, all that silly stuff. Did it for 20 years and never saw. In fact, if anything, the drugs got purer, more available. And you know, it's I like to tell people that they all want
law enforcement should be more effective. Well, the first thing I like to say is, and I know Utah is different because you worked in the prison system in Utah, but in the rest of the country, we do not have any drug-free prisons. And I'm sure they don't.
You neither, my friend. Let me tell you.
Yeah, exactly. And I like to bring that up to people because I like to say to people, how many of your rights are you willing to give up so that you cannot keep me off of drugs? Because that's what we're asking people to do. We're doing civil forfeiture. We're stealing people's property without even arresting them for it. And we're saying that that's part of trying to make this law work. When you have a failed policy, you would be amazed at the bizarre things you do to make it appear that it's working, even though it's failing every time.
Absolutely. You know, I have one other story, if we have that time. Casper, how are we?
We have about 6 minutes.
Okay, I think this would be really important, really important. I had a young lady. She was a student at the University of Utah, have an appointment with me, and she sat down and started talking. She wanted to buy a Aqua Native American Church authorized participation card, but she came in, and as she started talking, she just started tearing up, and I said, what's going on here, young lady? And she says, I'm too late. And I said, you're too late. And then she went in and she said, some time ago, her boyfriend, who was working on his PhD, happened to get stopped, and he had some resin in a pipe, cannabis resin. He ended up being incarcerated for 3 months. And then when he came out, he lost his scholarship in the program. And 2 weeks prior to her coming and visiting with me, he committed suicide.
Oh, Lord.
I mean, right now, it brings tears to my eyes.
Yeah.
This war on drugs is just causing chaos to the family unit. I mean, this is a young lady that she was going to be married to this fellow.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you, if that doesn't wake people up, what the heck will?
Yeah.
I mean, this war on drugs is just the most detrimental thing that you could possibly imagine to perpetrate upon our citizenship.
Well, it's like we say at LEAP, you can recover from your addiction. You never recover from your conviction. You get a felony conviction that goes with you to every job interview you go to for the rest of your life. And we should not be passing laws where the enforcement of the laws actually cause more damage to people than the thing that we're trying to stop. That is not good lawmaking, and that's what we're doing. There's more people that are destroyed by the criminal justice system and having their life destroyed than are destroyed by drugs. You know, it's just a reality, and we keep doing it over and over again. It's almost as if the drugs aren't bad enough, we got to make them worse by making them illegal. You know?
It's just so ironic. You know, in Utah County, is known per capita as the overdose county of the country. More people overdose on drugs in Utah County than anywhere else in the nation per capita. And I finally have come to a type of a settlement of ideas of why this is happening, and it's because of hypocrisy.
Yep.
Plain hypocrisy. Young people cannot handle hypocrisy. And so you have people saying one thing, and then they say another thing, and the laws are doing something. It's driving our young people to suicide. It really is.
Well, it's like I tell people, the kids sit in the class and hear the DARE lecture, and they hear how marijuana makes you stupid and unproductive and all this other stuff, and meth is bad and heroin's bad. And then they walk out, and they're passing a joint around, and one of the people they're passing it to is the guy that's the head of the honor roll. The other one is the one that's doing this. The other one's the star of the football team. And they think to themselves, geez, these people aren't stupid. These people aren't unproductive. They lied to me about that. They must have lied to me about meth, too. I think I'll try a little bit of that. And that's
right
the problem
on.
When you're not honest. You got to be honest and tell people.
Every Wednesday we have on the program my joint host, Peter Criss, from LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. He will be joining us here in just a moment. And we also have on the program today an individual who's already been on the show. We're doing a three-part series with this individual, and it's been pretty interesting so far. And his name is James Mooney. James, thank you for taking time for Hemp.
It's an honor. It's an honor, Casper.
And I want to thank you for coming back on the show. It really rocks that you're doing this presentation like this. And it gives you a chance to talk with Peter and I. Peter, thank you for joining us as well. Thank you for being on time for Hemp.
Yeah, well, actually, I wasn't on time. I was about a minute late, but it's good to be on time for Hemp.
And you are joining our joint broadcast. And any time that you hear the word joint on the broadcast, we fire up a joint, a vaporizer, a bowl of a pipe, anything that you smoke out of, and you pass it around with your friends, and if you're all by yourself, well, you just take an extra hit here at Time for Hemp. Right, Peter?
That's what we say jointly. We do say that jointly, don't we? Because this is a joint program for LEAP and Time for Hemp. And James Mooney.
And James is going to be jointly discussing the war on drugs and how it has corrupted our judicial system.
Yes, I appreciate it. Good to hear your voice again, Peter.
Yep, good to hear you too, James.
Yeah.
How's things going out there?
Well, I'd have to say from 1 to 10, about 100 and getting better.
There you go. Can't ask for anything better than that. Anything come up new in the last couple weeks since we talked last?
No, things are just progressing very nicely. I'm very, very happy. I'm excited about this particular broadcast where we can share some of our ideas and feelings about how this war on drugs has actually corrupted our entire judicial system. And from my perspective, anyway, it's really done a horrible thing to our entire judicial system.
Yeah,
I'm sure
absolutely.
You know, stories yourself where I think it has done some just some terrible harm to the reputation of our law enforcement people and what we stand for and the Constitution, etc.
Well, this type of use of law enforcement has been a detrimental factor in every society that uses it. When you use law enforcement to try to teach or try to force people to live by a certain moral standard, not harm to, obviously committing harm to other people or other people's property, that's a whole separate issue. But when you have people that are just living their lives, doing what they choose to do, and doing it with people that want to do it with them, and then you make that illegal, it disrupts the whole unit and puts a wedge in between law enforcement and the citizenry, because people don't want to talk to law enforcement anymore because they're afraid they're peeking in their window. And that's not what our job was designed to be. We were designed to protect people from other people.
You know, I agree with you, Peter, but I have a different slant on this. I think it corrupts our entire system, as you know, and as both of us, well, you're more of a cop that wore a uniform all the time. I've covered for 7 years.
Right.
And I tell you, I've got a couple stories that really give a vivid example of what I'm concerned about. And one was when I was working undercover on this one particular project where was bringing in a good deal of drugs from out of the country,
mm-hmm.
and into Utah, and I
had been working on this one particular takedown for about 3 months, and we had them. I mean, we just had them. And it was a community that flew in their merchandise from other countries. I'm not going to say which ones.
Right.
And what happened is that we were ready to make the warrants out, and I was getting the information to put into the warrant and the whole thing. And we were meeting. I was meeting with my only contact, and I'm calling him KS. And what happened is that we were meeting at this one place, and he got out of the car. And I'll never forget this. I could tell when he got out of the car that he was angry. And as he walked up to me, and I said, what's going on, man? And he says, it's off. And I said, what do you mean it's off? He says, the whole thing that we've been working on for 3 months, it's off. I said, how can that possibly be? It's off. We got them cold. It's all ready. I mean, it's all ready to take them down. And then he said, one of the county commissioners of this particular county, it's their pet project. I about died. I was so angry.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized at that point in time, what I was doing was taking off this person's competition so that he could have all the goods for this particular county. I went berserk, as KS did too. We just went nuts.
Yep.
And I mean, and I know that's not the only, I'm not the only one that has had that type of an experience. And then there's another one.
Go ahead.
And this is what's devastating to me. Shortly after I had that particular experience, I was hired on by the prison system in Utah. And my major objective or my calling and what I was hired for was to lead a program called the Last Shot Program.
Mm-hmm.
And the Last Shot Program's purpose was to find a way to eliminate recidivism. And at that time, it was 90% or close to 90%.
Right.
In other words, for every 1,000 people that are released from prison within 3 years, 900 of them would be back into prison. And so
right.
That's just a horrible statistic. Well, anyway, I started working on this, utilizing Native American ceremonies and counseling systems, such as sweat lodges, sacred prayer pipe ceremonies, and sacred breath ceremonies. And again, a Native American counseling system is a little bit different than most clerical counseling systems, where there's no victims in the Native American counseling system, because the basic belief is that we're all God, and so
uh-huh.
How can what God have you ever known was a victim to anything?
Right.
So it's kind of a unique way of counseling. Well, anyway, after a year and a half and keeping accurate recordings, we were able to drop the recidivism less than 30%. And I made the reports and had everything, turned them into the state and the whole thing, and I'm sitting in my office one day, and a leader of another program that has had $1.5 million, I think it was, budget for the entire year, but has absolutely no feasible results or positive results,
mm-hmm.
comes into my office and says, James, I understand you've got some incredible figures. I said, well, yeah, I think so. And I was new at the game at the time, so
right.
He asked me, can I have those figures? Or can I look at them? And I said, sure, here they are. And so he took a look at them and said, oh, my gosh, this is incredible. I said, yeah, I'm pretty happy with it, too. And he says, can I have these figures? I said, absolutely, there they are. Here they are. So he took my figures, went to the state legislators of the state of Utah, and got another $1.5 million for utilizing my figures. And guess which program they canceled?
His program.
my program.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, they, which one they canceled? I thought you said which one they funded.
No. They canceled.
Yeah, they can't. They canceled the one that gave them. They gave them. They canceled the one that gave them the figures that they were happy about, and then gave all the money to the guy that couldn't do anything with it anyways. It was going to keep doing the same garbage over and over again.
Right, and now this is 10 years later. They won't. The state of Utah refuses or is blackballing Aquava Native American Church's programs to be instituted in the prison system. We're blackballed. They won't let us in.
No, it's not. This is not unusual. This is what happens when you deal with any kind of a bureaucratic system. I don't care whether it's the banking system or the government. It's the same thing. People take care of their own, and they push everything else off to the side. Nobody is interested in solving the problem. We have the same problem. We have the same problems in this movement, and we talked about this a little bit before. There's a root problem here of prohibiting consensual adult behavior, and when you do that in any society, first off, it doesn't work in eliminating the behavior. Secondly, it creates crime, and if there's money involved in it, it creates violence in that society that tries it. We've seen that all throughout history, everywhere we look. And yet in this movement, we have people that think that they're going to end this policy by dealing with the marijuana issue, okay? And my argument is this. We're basically the marijuana issue, that most of the people that are fighting for the legalization of marijuana or the medicalization of marijuana, the primary principle that they're fighting for that on is that marijuana really isn't that bad, it's got medical uses, and it shouldn't be prohibited. And my question has always been to those people, if we legalize marijuana tomorrow, if we make it legal, okay, if we treat it like we treat alcohol and beer, what are you going to do about the heroin trade, the crack cocaine trade, the methamphetamine trade? Are we now going to go out there and try to explain to people that methamphetamine is really okay and it should be legal? And I mean, after all, the medical community uses amphetamines all the time in medical practices. So are we going to have to take these drug by drug, or are we going to finally realize that there's a fundamental root policy here of prohibiting consensual adult behavior that has to be eliminated in order for us to call ourselves a free society? And it's even in this movement we have people that have a hard time taking that on. In fact, that's why we formed LEAP, was to take on exactly that issue, because we felt that we were the ones from law enforcement who could speak to that issue, because we can tell you that we are not failing at this drug war because we're not trying hard enough to make it work. We're failing because the root concept behind it is a bad policy. But that's just one idiot's point of view.
You know, Peter, I'm in agreement with you 100-fold. I think if there's anything that I have a appendage to that particular thought, is that, you know, if we are able to assist in eliminating the laws on marijuana, then at least that's one more thing that they cannot, people can be prosecuted for and being placed into the prison system. And it also brings up something else that's really the fundamental reasoning for all of this corrupt policies is financial. It's about financial.
Oh, yeah.
And when
yeah.
you have these private prison institutions that, what are the halfway houses? All they're concerned is about profit. It's got nothing to do with about being helpful to society. And these laws that are set out on moral issues than on criminal issues, what you're doing is just feeding the prison systems. I mean, you have the lobbyists of the prisons trying to make laws about anything and everything. If they could, they'd make a law against breathing, for goodness sakes. So the jails filled.
Exactly.
What it comes down to is pure and unadulterated greed. And that's what...
Absolutely. And now we've gone from
when I first got into police work back in 1969, there was not one privately owned prison in America. There was not one profit-making prison in America with stockholders making money off of the fact that that prison was running. Now we have them in every state in the union, and we've turned taking away somebody's liberty into a profit-making program for another person. Now, that's almost a definition of the word slavery.
Oh,
right? I take the liberty away from somebody in Africa, and I bring them here, and I make money on it. I take away your liberty, and I make money on it. We call that slavery, but when it's our prison system, we call it the prison industrial complex.
There's a clear point, too, is that I worked 7 years undercover. In the last about a month and a half, I was asked to come up to headquarters of the DEA. I believe it was the DEA. There's about three other officials in this room that I went into, and my one contact said these people wanted to get in touch with me to see if I could open up some new doors for them. And so I drove about 2 hours from southern Utah up to Salt Lake City, went into this very secured facility. I do remember going to the third floor, and I walked into this room with my James.
I hear the music playing, which means it's time to take a commercial break already, and we're going to come back after that and listen to some music and then take more Time for Hemp.
Yo, what's up? Check this out.
The voice of the revolution. American Freedom Radio.
Your frequency is ascending with Strange Universe Radio, the most popular internet program in the galaxy, weeknight 7 to 9 p.m. Pacific Time with your host, Sean David Morton.
This one I'm boom shop, come boom up the nation, Neon Danny Morton and Combination. Hey, 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 go down your dance, Uzi, Pink Palette and Co Susie, come on the damn jacuzzi, turn up the Ghana movie, we gonna groovy, groovy, we gonna party hardy, that is most in goofy. Make it move your body, body.
The way we flip the track back, yo. Jump down, yes, give me the vibe back. This is the way we flip the track back, yo. To London, call it SE9. And when you get with the baseline, wiggle and whine, you gotta come in time. With the time, it's fine. In with a beat, but only now, see now. I'll get your voice back, great. Come on, get the mic, get your voice back, great. Come on, get the mic, get your voice back, great. Come on, get the mic on, baby, cause it's in the break the dome. Now you know the track's like me. Straight from a London boy, you see. Now you know the track's like me. Straight from a London boy, you see.
Put on your dancing Uzi, Pink Palette and Co Susi. Come out the damn jacuzzi, turn off the Ghana movie. We gonna groovy, groovy, we gonna party hardy. That the most in groovy, groovy, make you move your body, body.
The way we flip the track back, yo, jump down, yes, give me the vibe back. This is the way we flip the track back, yo, to London, call it SE9. And when you get with the baseline, wiggle and whine, you gotta come in time. With the time, you're fine in with a beat, but only now, please now. But I'll get your boys back, great, come on, get them out, get your boys back, great, come on, get them out, get your boys back, great, come on, get the mic on, baby, cause it's in the break the dawn. One man band, one with a melody, come on with the mic, yo, come and grab it with me. You never know the wages, ages, baby, coming down, yo, make my brain go crazy.
Put on your dancing, Uzi, Pink Palette and Co Susi. Come out the damn jacuzzi, turn off the Ghana movie. We gonna groovy, groovy, we gonna party hardy. That the most in groovy, groovy, make you move your body, body. Kind of lyrics in new design. Me 5 foot 6, me girl 4 foot 9. She wear the jewelry
with the Calvin Klein. Come in the dance for quarter past nine and go by the bar and drink some wine. And 5 o'clock, that's a bit of time. I reach me home and me feel so fine. And put on your dancing shoes, bring pallet and so cozy. Come out the damn jacuzzi, turn off the goddamn movie. We gonna groovy, groovy. We gonna party hardy. That's the most thing groovy, groovy. Make you move your body, body. Put on your dancing shoes, bring pallet and so cozy. Come out the damn jacuzzi, turn off the goddamn movie. We gonna groovy, groovy. We gonna party hardy. That's the most thing groovy, groovy. Make you move your body, body. Go still, happy rewind. Lock them stand, I can hear you.
Yeah, baby, let's party, party. Let everybody know that it really is time for hemp. Every Wednesday on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, here on the big program, we celebrate the hardworking members of law enforcement against prohibition. Leap, and I would encourage you to find a member of their amazing group and invite them to your neck of the woods to help feed minds about the importance of ending prohibition. My joint host today, Peter Chris. Hi, Peter.
Hello, Casper. How are you this fine day?
Fine. I'll let you and James pick up where the commercial took us.
Okay. You were talking about the prison you visited, James.
Actually, it was the meeting of the top, I think, the DEA and the top task force for the state of Utah.
Right, and right. I'm sorry.
I went up into that meeting. It was a very clandestine type of a thing where it was a very secretive. And they asked me if I could get into this. I said, yeah, can I get into this and this and all this other type of stuff? And I said, yeah, I'm able to do that. And then this is what really shocked me. They said, you know, we're more than willing to give you 10 to 20%, depending on the circumstances, of all the seized properties.
Lord.
Cash. And I sat there and I looked at them and I looked at my friend and I said, well, that's really interesting. And so we left that meeting and I walked out of the office and before KS did, and we had a prearranged place that we'd go to, and as he happened to get to the restaurant before I did. It was a parking lot of a restaurant. And as I was walking up to him, he looked at me and he said, it's over, isn't it, James? I said, absolutely. He said, this is not what I got into this for.
Yep.
This is just not what I got into this for. And that was the last last activity I ever did on undercover.
It's interesting when you mention that because we never had in our – I might have mentioned this before, but we never had a narcotics unit on my department when we were there. We were 120-officer police department. We served a community of about 85,000 residents. And the reason we never had a separate narcotics unit is because at any time the idea of a narcotics unit would come up at the staff meeting, there would be this one captain sitting there who would be saying why we don't need one. And then I retired, and 6 months later, they started a narcotics unit. So, because that voice wasn't there anymore. So it's about a year after they started the unit, and I was back in town visiting some family, and I stopped by the PD, and I'm sitting in the assistant chief's office, and the captain of detectives, good friend of mine, the assistant chief, good friend of mine, captain of detectives comes in with a clipboard in his hand, and it's about 3:45. He says, Pete, just shut up for a minute. He says, I got to take care of some business. I got to get out of here right at 4 o'clock. I said, okay. He starts going down a list of things, the stereo, the TV set, this stuff, that they confiscated from some guy. And now we're trying to figure out the price that they were going to sell it back to him for. Okay? That's what they were going over. He offered us $500 for the television. I think we can get $600. I'm in a police department, and this discussion is going on. And in the midst of this, I stood up, and I said, oh, you guys kill me. And they both stop, and they look at me, and they say, I know the drug stuff. I go, no, not the drug stuff. I said for 20 years when I was on this job that this was a great job.
This was a fantastic job. But this would have been a perfect job if we could go on commission. And now I've left, and you guys are on commission. And that's what we're talking about. We got police departments that are making money. They're not even arresting people. They're doing civil forfeiture, stealing people's property from them, and then either selling it back to them or selling it someplace else and keeping the money, even without making an arrest. That's how far we have gone in this wonderful free land of America with our freedoms and the power we've given to law enforcement, because they have told us that if you want us to do enforce these laws, we need more power. So we kept giving it to them and giving it to them and giving it to them without taking a look at the fact that these laws are unenforceable. I had a guy come up to me at a presentation one time, very smugly. He didn't agree with my conclusion on the issue. And he came up to me and he said, "You know, I just got back from the Middle East." He says, "You know what they do to you in Saudi Arabia if they catch you with drugs?" I said, "Yeah." "They take you down to the middle of the town square and they cut your head off." And he looks at me very smugly and he says, "That's right." I said, "Let me tell you two things about that. First, call me crazy, but when I think of countries I want America to be more like, Saudi Arabia is not one of the first ones that comes into my head." I said, "And secondly, you know what they do every year in Saudi Arabia, the people that they catch with drugs? They take them to the towns, down to the town square, and they cut their head off. And you know why they do it every year? Because it doesn't work. If it worked, the rest of the people see that head rolling through the courtyard, that'd be the end of the drug problem. But even with that punishment, it doesn't end the problem." And that's what we have to look at. We have to. We had Kilikowski, our drug czar, has said very clearly over the last couple of weeks about the drug problem being a health care problem. And, you know, we have to spend more money on treatment and education, and it's a health care problem. And not one reporter that was interviewing him or talking to him asked him the question, and the question is, what other health care issue should we criminalize? How about cancer? How about putting everybody in prison for life if we catch them with a tumor? Does that sound like a good idea? You know, here he knows it's a health care issue, but yet he still supports criminalization and prisons and all this other stuff for people. As you said before, there's got to be a lot more to this than just presume or the idea that they're trying to help people, because they aren't doing that. You don't help.
It's got nothing to do with helping people.
I know.
As a matter of fact, it's actually the exact opposite.
Right.
You can go to prison for life on distributing peyote if you do not belong to a Native American church. And Harvard Hospital put out a six-year study, I believe it was 6 years, maybe it was five, study that not only the taking of peyote is good for you, okay, and that's exactly, and the reason they came up with the fact that it's good for you, people that take peyote on a regular basis score higher in all the mental indexes that they gave to people that didn't take peyote on a regular basis. And so here you have a substance that is proven unequivocally to benefit a human being, and yet, if you're taking it, you can go to prison for life.
And the reason we can do that is because we still haven't addressed the fundamental underlining issue, and that is, it is not a free government's business to criminalize other people's personal behavior. That's not the function of government. And that, you know, if we take these things off the list one by one, we're going to be doing this for 1,000 years. How about getting to the root of the problem? You know, it's, I did a radio show in Buffalo. I might have mentioned this on the last show. I did a radio show in Buffalo, and they were talking about the governor here who wants to pass this law to decriminalize marijuana. Well, actually, his law isn't decriminalizing marijuana, because we already did that in New York State back in the 70s, but this is decriminalizing public possession of marijuana because of all these people that are being arrested in New York City. And somebody, and he said to me on the radio show, "What do you think of that?" I said, "I'm glad our governor is not Abraham Lincoln." And he said,
What do you mean, Abraham Lincoln? I said, well, if Abraham Lincoln thought the same way our governor did back in 1863, he wouldn't have signed the Emancipation Proclamation and done away with slavery. He just would have passed a law that said you could only beat your slaves between noon and four on Friday, because that would have reduced the harm. You know, it wouldn't have, it's better than beating them every day, isn't it? And maybe we should pass a law, you got to give them three square. No, what he did was he eliminated the root problem, which was slavery. And we dealt with that for almost 150 years, dealing with the results of that. But he eliminated slavery. At least we got that off the books, and then we're able to go on with our other problems that we had to deal with. And we have to eliminate this these criminalization of a consensual adult behavior. I may have mentioned this before. You know, in New York City, prostitution is illegal, okay? And if those Secret Service guys had pulled the same stunt in New York City as they pulled in Colombia, we would have never known about it, because the prostitute who got ripped off wouldn't have called the police, because she's doing something illegal. But in Colombia, where it was legal, the person who got ripped off called the police. That's what you're supposed to do in a free society. But so we didn't. It isn't that there isn't any prostitution in New York because it's illegal. There's plenty of prostitution. It's just that the prostitutes don't have the protection of the law, and they're under the control of pimps, because we make that activity illegal, even though everybody involved in it wants to do it. So that's what we have to deal with here, I think. Of course, I may be crazy.
I think what we've been talking about, Peter, the prohibition, whether it's on substances or whether it's on moral behaviors, it's corrupting our whole judicial system. When you look at whether it's prostitution, whether you look at it, whether it's substance abuse or whatever the dynamics, as you and I are sitting here right now, you go to any courtroom. 70% of every judgment that a judge is putting out has something to do with substances. Something to do. 70% of every person in prison has to do with substances. And so what the real purpose of this for isn't to help and solve a solution here. It is to make somebody wealthy. It is based on greed. And right now, judging from the thing that started in 2008, or actually it was going on longer than that, where our whole economy dang near went underground. I mean, it's all based off of greed. Right now, you've got situations going that people. I'll never forget when I was jogging up one of the paths that we have in Utah, two guys were running towards me, and on their T-shirts they had, "Greed is good." Oh my gosh! I mean, I said, "What?" You know, I take a look at that. When I started doing undercover work, I thought I was doing something for our communities. I thought I was doing something for all mankind to help to get these terrible things off the drug. All I was doing was just perpetrating.
Well, what I've got to do here is take a commercial break so we can pay our bills, and then we're going to come back and take a whole lot more here at Time for Hemp.
Are you suffering from issues related to angina pain, high blood pressure, congestive heart failure, unbalanced cholesterol, irregular heartbeats, clogged arteries? If so, you are not alone. Millions of people are suffering from one or more of these problems. If you'd like to live your life free of sickness, pain, and fear, live your life with increased vitality, energy, and usefulness, and experience your body healing itself, then this might be the most important message you'll ever hear. An effective 100% organic nutritional supplement is now available. Heart and Body Extract is an exclusive formula of wild-crafted and organic herbs. It is extremely effective and starts to work within days. Get your Heart and Body Extract today by visiting heartandbody.com or by calling 866-295-5305, 866-295-5305, or heartandbody.com.
IndiGrow is your source for affordable induction grow lighting. First discovered in 1891 by Nikola Tesla, IndiGrow lights deliver 11 years of electronic sunlight to your plants. IndiGrow lamps require less than half the power of traditional HID lamps. Converting to IndiGrow lights means you'll cut down on your power bill with less lighting. IndiGrow lamps also use 5 times less mercury than traditional fluorescent or HID lamps, making IndiGrow not only energy efficient, but environmentally friendly as well. No more switching out lamps between vegetative and flowering stages. As nature intended, your lights get a steady dose of UV light that makes your plants grow healthier and stronger. IndiGrow products are manufactured in San Diego, California, and come with a written 10-year warranty. What Tesla knew, then growers know now, is that IndiGrow lighting is the cost-effective addition to your victory garden. To learn more or order now, go to inda-grow.com. That's inda-grow.com. Or call 877-452-2244 to answer any of your questions. These guys really know lights. IndiGrow really is your sunlight in a box.
THCF Medical Clinics are the premier physicians clinic in the United States. THCF has offices all across the United States from Hawaii to Michigan. THCF Medical Clinics has helped approximately 150,000 patients obtain their medical marijuana permits to legally possess, grow, and use medical marijuana. If you have chronic pain, multiple sclerosis, or any other neurological degenerative disease, or if you have any gastrointestinal disorders such as GERD, irritable bowel syndrome, or if you have AIDS, cancer, spastic disorders, seizure disorders, or glaucoma, call us at 1-800-723-0188 or visit us online at hemp.org. Again, the number is 1-800-723-0188. And the site is hemp.org.
South Sound Medical Clinic is a complete one-stop medical facility that offers full-service healthcare at affordable rates. Their experienced doctors specialize in traditional, naturopathic, and alternative medicines. South Sound Medical Doctors make great primary care physicians because they cover all bases for your overall health. The doctors can also coordinate with a specialist, schedule surgeries, and have privileges in hospitals so they can monitor your progress to better serve you, the patients. Also, they authorize the use of cannabis as part of an alternative therapy for the treatment of approved medical disorders. South Sound Medical accepts all major medical insurance for traditional medicine only. South Sound Medical Clinic is located at 820 6th Avenue in Tacoma, Washington, across the street from Wright Park. Go to southsoundmedical.com or call 888-350-0422. That number again is 888-350-0420. South Sound Medical, your one-stop medical clinic.
You're listening to the future of talk. American Freedom Radio. This is American Freedom Radio.
Your daily dose of conspiracy and comedy is the Vinnie Eastwood Show. In a world so full of madness and chaos, don't lose your sense of humor or you'll go friggin' nuts. Weekdays, 5 till 7 Central on American Freedom Radio.
Well, I once had a bowl, a good green reaver, a big fat dog beef, a sweeter.